You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report. Where every day is casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. Even Saturday and Sunday are casual. Sorry, Jesus. So don't forget your denim hip huggers. Don't forget your bootcut jeans. We're not afraid of dungarees on the Majority Report.
It is indeed Casual Friday, March 18th, 2011. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. It is Casual Friday. Not too much casual about this Friday. The UN has voted on imposing a no-fly zone, but it's a little bit broader, frankly, than a no-fly zone over Libya. It's sort of a no-fly and whatever else it takes zone. And later in the program, we're going to be talking to Spencer Ackerman, senior reporter at the Danger Room for Wired magazine. There have been, just in the past hour, I guess 2 hours. We have we've got a couple of developments. One, a claim by Gaddafi and the Libya government that it has issued a ceasefire, and then counterclaims by people calling in from the eastern part of Libya saying there is no ceasefire. The guy is still bombing us, and the war continues. This resolution from the UN involves, I think, a quote that says, whatever else it takes. And so let's be honest. This is our latest war, ladies and gentlemen. We will talk to Spencer Ackerman more about this in depth later in the program. Of course, we will also have, as it is Casual Friday, Chris Rosen with us. Whatever his title is at that website that he's from, where he's going to tell us some movies to watch over the weekend. Speaking of the weekend, tomorrow on Ring of Fire Radio, which, as you know, I am a co-host with Bobby Kennedy and Mike Papantonio. I have two interviews tomorrow. Rick Perlstein, the historian who wrote a couple of great books. The latest was Nixon. On just some a historical context for the labor movements in Madison. He was out there last weekend, as was I. And I remind you that if you go to the blog at majority.fm, find the Madison post from last weekend. I have added more pics and videos. More pics and videos. Check it out. I also interview Chris Hayes on Ring of Fire this weekend on the past and perhaps present manipulation by commodity speculators on the price of oil. The speculation of the price of oil driving the price of oil up. I'll give you one fact that sums up this interview. 10 years ago, you have two types of people who participate in the commodity trading of oil and the futures trading of oil. One, people whose businesses are tied to the price of oil. For instance, an airline. The price of oil goes up. That affects their bottom line of their business. They get involved in the commodities market. They will perhaps go long on the price of oil. So if the price of oil goes up, they pay for it in their business, but they make money on the other side in their investment. That's people who have a direct interest in the price of oil. the other person who would go and buy oil futures would be a speculator. 10 years ago, the market consisted roughly of 25% speculators, 75% people whose livelihood or their business somehow was influenced by the price of oil. Today, that number is flipped. 75% of the people involved in the oil commodities trading are speculators. So you remember when this happened with, what was that thing? Oh, houses and real estate created a bit of a bubble. Oil, of course, in commodities, not the same thing as real estate, frankly, but certainly can drive up the price. That's on Ring of Fire this weekend. Again, if you have the opportunity to become a member of the Majority Report, it is what keeps us going. And you can also support the show by buying stuff through our Amazon link and buying coffee at justcoffee.coop. Apparently, the cost of coffee has gone up through the roof. And you can get a 10% discount by using the coupon code MAJORITY at justcoffee.coop. It's all fair trade. It is, prices are certainly in New York, relative to New York City. I mean, this is out of Madison, Wisconsin. These guys have actually been supplying coffee to a lot of the protesters. So a great outfit, great coffee, and you get a discount. What more could you possibly want? Now to the other aspect of the sort of seeming apocalypse that's taking place in the world, as we have a new war in the Middle East that we're involved in. And in Japan, the just more and more images and video coming out, just really disturbing. Now the death toll is at around 7,000. There are at least 10,000 missing, but I don't even think they're capable of determining how many are missing at this point. So, you know, we're going to be looking at death tolls in the tens of thousands, I think, by the time that this is all accounted for. And that is also with the optimistic view that we don't get more of a disaster coming out of these four reactors at the Fukushima nuclear power plant. And it's not clear that that's going to happen. A couple of disturbing stories, of course. Updated from Zero Hedge, officials remain committed to cooling down the overheated nuclear fuel rods and keep spraying reactor number 3 at the crippled Fukushima Daiichi plant. But the plant's operator, Tokyo Electric Power Company, TEPCO as they're known, says encasing the reactors in concrete may prove the only way to prevent a catastrophic radiation leak. I don't even know how you do that. They can barely get water on this thing. Never mind dropping cement on these things. U.S. nuclear officials, meanwhile, according to the LA Times this morning, suspect that the Japanese plant has a dire breach. And not in the reactor container, but in the a leak in the spent fuel rod pool. And this apparently was sort of like an afterthought. You know, one of the big issues with nuclear power is where do you put the fuel once you've used it? Because it's no less radioactive. And so they create these big pools and they just drop them in there. And I guess the plan is wait until we figure out, you know, do we send these things all up in a spaceship or what? And U.S. government nuclear experts believe that a spent fuel pool at the Fukushima reactor complex has a breach in the wall or floor. So the problem is that you need to keep these things immersed in water because it's the only way to keep them cool. The problem up to this point has been a lack of electricity to power the pumps that pump water in there, because obviously the water evaporates because of the heat. So there was no power, so they started to try and put seawater in there. Well, now the problem seems to be, and this probably has been the problem all along, that either the earthquake or the tsunami or poor engineering or a combination of all those three things has created a leak. And so you're trying to essentially keep this cup full because there's something in the cup that is very bad if it's not kept cool. And you can't keep water in there. This is an assessment by the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission. Is based on the sequence of events that have taken place there. U.S. officials are now, I think, on the ground in Japan. The AIE is there as well. They have raised the catastrophe rating from 4 to 5, which now puts it on a 3-mile island. But my sense is this thing is going further. Is it going to be a Chernobyl? Nobody knows. I mean, I'll tell you something. I have done nothing but read about this for the past, the days. And it depends on which person you talk to, which person you read, as to how catastrophic this can or will become. Some people already say that the writing's on the wall, man. This is already going to be a disaster. And another report out of Bloomberg, which it's an extensive report. I don't have time for it right now. We can talk about it a little bit later in the program. But essentially, that there has been a series of faked reports by TEPCO over the years. They have been serial liars. Like, frankly, we know industry always lies. I mean, I'm sure there's 10 to 15% of industry that has, or 10, 15% of examples where industry has not lied. But the overwhelming evidence of just about every industry there is that they lie, that they cover up safety problems. And, sometimes you get a massive leak in the Gulf of Mexico. Sometimes you get some E. coli. Sometimes you just get, a kid's toy that doesn't work. The problem with that, when it comes to something like this nuclear power plant, is that, there's no doozozer. There's no mulligans on this one. You can't say, we'll get them next time on this one. Just like we've seen in the Gulf, where you have clearly, dolphins now dying at incredible rates who are at the top of the food chain, which is a real problem. We have problems there that we're not even aware of. Well, if this fails in the way that people are talking about it failing, you're going to poison half of a country. And by that, I mean, maybe you'll poison a significant portion of the Japanese people. Maybe you won't, but you will make a significant portion of the country perhaps inhabitable until we're all long, long gone. So, in theory, I have no doubt that we can make nuclear power safe, in theory. But we're not putting this on a blackboard. And, living in New York City, living in New York State, in the southern part of the state, I pray that nothing like this ever happens to the Indian Point nuclear power plant, because we'll all be screwed. But look, it's Casual Friday. Let's keep it light. Let's do a little this. Loosen up, folks. Dorsey's just come in. Now it was the voice of the lonely wearing his members only jacket or something strange, I think. It is Friday, folks. So you know what that means. That means that I get to basically ostensibly listen to film suggestions from Chris Rosen from movieline.com. But I think, in the end, what it is just basically my way of, it's like kicking the dog in a way. We got all of this stuff going on around the world, very disturbing. And so I guess I end up taking it out on Chris Rosen. later in the program, we're going to talk about this. I'm going to get to this really disturbing copyright crackdown that the Obama administration has proposed. Some good news on the gay marriage front. Some good news coming out of Wisconsin. Not great news, but some good news. They're going to feel some pain there. And a funny clip from Representative Wiener on the floor of the House talking about the Republicans' insanity. I'm also going to address in the post-show today the interview yesterday. I've gotten more emails about that interview I did yesterday than any interview we've ever done. Bizarre, but that's the case. We'll be right back. Ladies and gentlemen, Sam Cedar on the Majority Report. I'm looking at the visage of Chris Rosen right now, and he didn't seem to enjoy that theme song. Chris,
I did. Oh, okay. I like the song. Yeah. I've heard it. You know, how many times are you going to hear it? You want me to dance around every time?
Listen,
I can.
I understand. And we only have seven.
A very short amount of time.
A very short amount of time today because we have another guest because of what's going on in Libya and whatnot. My understanding is that we have known you as the senior editor of movieline.com. My understanding
yes.
is that, are you in line for a promotion?
Not right now, actually. We're still senior editor. So,
oh, okay.
You know, hopefully,
right.
You know, maybe in the future we'll be.
You know, I'd
something.
Like to think that maybe the show.
I think
people...
it has. This is on my resume and it looks very nice.
I don't
know,
doubt it.
Weekly
I don't
contributor.
Doubt it. I don't doubt it. Now, listen, I don't know if I had a chance to tell you this last week. I didn't because I was in.
We didn't talk last week, yes.
Right, because I was in Wisconsin. I watched 127 Hours.
Really
enjoyed it.
It's a great movie, right?
Great movie.
I
saw
good.
Wasteland, I mean, which I thought was actually a significantly better movie. But have you seen Wasteland?
I have not.
Jesus. Seriously?
I haven't.
You don't watch documentaries, do you?
I do watch them, just not. I mean, there's a lot of documentaries.
Just not the Academy
just
Award
the good
nominated
one.
Ones, right? Just not.
Well,
the...
I have an Academy Award one picked out for you to for a recommendation today.
All right, let's hear it now. Now,
well,
just
now...
to remind people, what Chris Rosen does is he tells me what Netflix shows, streaming shows I should watch over the weekend, and you know we're going to expand it to Amazon on Demand now because.
Well, that was what actually, you know, and that's what I'm going to pick for the documentary this week. I just had a question about the format for you and stuff, but I saw. But anyway, go ahead if you want to finish.
Well, I mean, I have Roku now, and that's,
you have
that's
Roku,
what I can do.
Right.
Okay, so there we go.
On Netflix, on Amazon, Netflix on Demand actually has been really kind of lousy, I think, lately. You know,
this is like your go-to excuse.
I'm sorry, there's just not a lot of stuff there.
You said that about Netflix, you said that about Amazon.
No, Amazon looks good. Now, here's the question I have for you. How does it work for you? Because I saw on Amazon you actually can rent movies.
That's
and
right.
Watch them, but you have to pay for it. It's not free like Netflix on Demand.
Well,
is
I know,
right?
But we're going to replace the regular on demand. We're just expanding it.
Gotcha.
We have one... our guest's modulation is much louder than yours.
I'm just a loud talker.
Evan, did you hear that?
It's very loud. I'll pull
you didn't
back.
Did you hear what I just said?
No.
Our guest is louder than I am, according to listeners.
Yeah, I'm actually trying to fix that right now.
Oh. He's staring off into space. I don't know what's going on around here.
I'll whisper. Is okay. This better?
Listen with my ears, Sam.
Okay.
Okay. So anyway, yeah, Netflix, you know, whatever we'll do. But Amazon, I'd like to do today, and I'd like to suggest Inside Job, which you've probably seen or have you not seen?
No, I want to see Inside Job. I'm glad to hear that's a great recommendation. I've actually been trying to get them for an interview. I think we were very close, and I think we got to wait now after they won the Academy Award, you know.
That's how you know, you don't want to put a lot of stock in Academy Awards because – like we say, not a lot of stuff. The good stuff doesn't always win. But this year at the Academy Awards, the best documentary category was easily one of the best. I mean, every one of those films was very strong. Like we talked about Exit Through the Gift Shop before.
Great movie.
That's a great movie. And Gasland was on it. And Wasteland was on it.
Yep.
And now, you know, that Inside Job actually ended up winning, I think says a lot about how strong of a movie it is. And Charles Ferguson, the director, gave a great speech. It's a very good movie. I think you'll like it. You know, look inside the financial meltdown and stuff. And, you know, and it's kind of one of those where you're going to get really pissed off at it. And I think in a good way.
Yeah. All right. That's a great great suggestion. I can't help but think that I've rubbed off on you in some way.
You did. And it's on Amazon on demand. I think it's not very, very expensive. I looked last night. It's like $3 or whatever it is to rent it.
Right.
So
that's what I want.
You know,
I want it to be cheap. I want it to be cheap and good. Hey, did you listen to the interview that I did with Lucy Walker, the director of
Wasteland? No, I saw you posted that. I have it favorited on my Twitter.
Great.
Was it good?
He's too busy watching.
I'm busy. I have a job.
Parks and Recreation or whatever it is.
Hey, that was a great show, and it got renewed for a fourth season, so we'll all be looking forward to that.
Great.
On demand, actually, this week on Time Warner On Demand, if you haven't canceled yet, which have you or not?
Well, wait a second. Well, no, I don't want two on demand. I want one Netflix.
Well, I gave two on demand. I'm not doing Netflix this week. I want all Amazon. I want to give you another on demand one because there's a lot of good stuff on demand.
I don't know if we lose our license if we do this. All right, go ahead. Give me one more on demand. I'm not gonna watch two movies then. I never watch two movies anyways.
This then for the rest of your audience, you and I have talked about this in the past. The Fighter came out this week on DVD and it's on demand, and it was a fantastic movie. It was probably one of my favorite movies of last year with Mark Wahlberg and Christian Bale, and it's about Mickey Ward is a boxer in Boston and his brother Dickie Eklund, who is his half brother, and he's also a crack addict, and it's really, really great movie. Very typical kind of like underdog story. But the way it's done is great, and the performances are all great, and Christian Bale and Melissa Leo both won Oscars for it.
So
and it's got the Boston accents thing, which we love.
Yes, and well, Marky Mark, he came from Boston.
Right, and Christian Bale does a phenomenal Boston accent. And to tie it into, you know, certain things that, this is old news, but if you've seen Charlie Sheen, any of those crazy webcam things that he's done in the last month.
Ugh, no.
He exists. It happens. Anyway, he looks
My understanding is he exists.
He looks like Christian Bale in this movie. Like, that's how strung out Charlie Sheen looks. And Christian Bale lost, like, 40 pounds to play this, like, crack addict. And you can't even recognize him. It's really, really impressive.
I heard you're supposed to keep your eyes out for the sisters, too. They're supposed to be, like, the unsung heroes of the show.
Sisters?
Because the way it is Melissa Leo plays their mother. And she has a bunch of children from different men and husbands, and so there are seven sisters, and they're these Irish sisters who are just gruff and brusque and totally filthy, and like they get into fights, and it's like a real big Irish stereotype thing, but it's super funny, and they're great.
Listen, I grew up in Massachusetts. The entire state's full of thugs. That's it.
That's what they are. One of them is played by a Conan O'Brien's sister.
Oh,
so you know they're legitimate. And Amy Adams is in this as well. She's wonderful. She plays Marky Mark's girlfriend. She's
your favorite movie of the year.
I loved it. I absolutely loved it. I think everyone should see it, and I don't think you would be disappointed. Even if you don't like boxing, it's not even that violent. It's a little violent, but not terribly.
All right. Well, fair enough.
And I didn't realize. I thought you got the Roku and the Amazon thing to replace Netflix. That's why I was confused.
Roku is Netflix.
It is Netflix. I'm going to Google this.
Jesus Christ, this guy doesn't know anything.
I'm going to go to Gizmodo and take Google.
Wow. All right. Well, Chris
no,
Rosen.
No, I know. I didn't know it was Netflix. I was misunderstood. I thought
dude,
you
I may just,
that.
You know.
Come on. This is a good segment.
Let's just
I
hope they don't call
job.
Me for a reference on your resume because I got news for you. I could be. I can
no,
see
no,
him as a junior editor, maybe.
No, not a junior editor. Senior.
All right.
MovieLine.com. Follow me on Twitter.
MovieLine.com. Follow Chris Rosen on, you know, his favorite thing is like, get better, get worse.
Get
That's
worse
your
is my
thing.
Catchphrase.
That's your catchphrase. Get worse.
I had a, you know, Sam, funny story. I know you got to go, but at Air America, when I was there, I had a segment on the Ron Kuby show called Get Worse.
Ah, there you go. I'm surprised
so
that didn't
fun.
Take off.
Didn't catch on. I don't know
no,
why.
I don't
I
know. Very shocked.
Who knows?
Chris Rosen, we will see you next week. And you know what we're going to do next week?
What's that?
Well, you know, there's another movie that comes out March 29th.
Yes,
on DVD
did you send me the
and
screener?
VOD and on demand.
Okay, yeah, did you send me the screener?
You didn't get it yet?
I don't know. I didn't get it yet, no.
All right, send me an email. You should have gotten it.
Okay.
All right, bye.
Bye.
All right, folks, we're going to take a break. When we come back, I'll be talking to Spencer Ackerman of Wired on just what's going on in Libya. We'll be right back after this. Hi, folks. You can always support the show and get great coffee, tea, or chocolate by going to justcoffee.coop. Putting the coupon code MAJORITY in the coupon box, get a 10% discount, get some great fair trade coffee. And, of course, the real way that this show is going to be able to continue is if you become a member now. You can do so at majority.fm. You get almost an hour of extra daily show, plus some swag, plus knowing that you're supporting independent media. Thanks. All right, we are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report on the phone from Wired Magazine, the senior reporter who posts online at the Danger Room blog. It is a real pleasure to welcome back to the program, and I guess the first time on this iteration, Spencer Ackerman. Welcome, Spencer.
Back for the first time. Thanks, man.
What the frick? I mean, what the frack? I mean, so we've started,
yes.
We're in another war.
Another war. So right as I was publishing something about what weaponry we might be using in our now third simultaneous war, it came out that Libya's foreign minister, Musa Kusa, is saying that there is a ceasefire imposed, effective immediately, that armed hostilities against the rebels in Libya is going to stop. We have no idea what that means. We have absolutely no idea. How we would enforce that on the ground is completely unclear. We have AWACS surveillance planes in the air. Presumably, they can verify, as can satellite imagery, whether, in fact, some of these Libyan ground movements are going to stop against the rebels. But there's absolutely no certainty that that's going to mean that NATO isn't going to still launch airstrikes against Libya. And okay. So now we're in a position of waiting to find out, as you so eloquently put it, what the frick.
So now, let's break this down for a second. Now, I've seen CNN is reporting, and again, this is coming from phone calls they're getting from rebels, although some of their reporters have sort of implied that they can sort of corroborate this, that in eastern Libya, like in Misrata or Estaja, I guess it is, that there's still fighting going on. They're still bombing. It certainly would make sense that, you know, Gaddafi would claim, okay, we're a ceasefire, and then just continue on because that's the way that that's what they do. But let's just for the moment assume that there is a ceasefire. Let's assume for the moment that it holds. What then?
So let's think for a second about what the UN actually authorized, right? They put out a resolution that says all necessary measures to protect civilians are now authorized, right? So that's not just a no-fly zone. That could mean they explicitly rule out foreign ground troops, but that could mean really anything like for instance, if there are some of these guys, you know, coming under siege from Gaddafi's forces, even if those forces don't don't open fire on them, then perhaps NATO airstrikes could take place against, you know, trucks or tanks or whatever. We're in a position where in and around Benghazi, if there is a ceasefire, unless Gaddafi's troops actually pull back, those rebel areas are going to be under siege. You're not going to see supplies getting in and out. Perhaps they might be supplied from NATO humanitarian assistance from the sea. Gaddafi conceivably could, you know, maybe not stop that. But as you go further away from the Benghazi lines, and there are, you know, lines along the roads to like Ajibia and so forth, that Gaddafi's troops are cutting through, then it's entirely possible that you could see another wave of humanitarian disaster, even if Gaddafi's forces don't open fire.
Well, and
there's no clarity on this at all.
So there's no clarity in terms of what the U.S. And I should say the UN coalition can do. But there's also, it seems to me, there's also some vagueness in terms of what protecting the citizenry means. I mean, theoretically, if you could say that, well, you know, if there's a ceasefire and if Gaddafi pulls back, we need to help implement a partition here of this state, because if Gaddafi ever gets control of these areas again, he is going to kill these civilians.
That's why it's so significant that this language, all necessary measures, is in there. It, as you say, it can mean anything. There's nothing in the UN resolution that specifies what the end state of any authorized action is. At what point can you say there is no more humanitarian emergency in Libya, and can that happen short of Gaddafi leaving power?
Did you see Hillary Clinton speak this morning?
No, I did not. Tell me what she said.
I may have misheard this, but I believe that she said that this should lead to final negotiations, which should lead to Gaddafi leaving. Now, if that's accurate, aren't we talking here about regime change? This is not something to protect civilians. This is not about a humanitarian situation. This is not about stopping genocide. This becomes regime change.
And you can say that in the, I guess now, 10 days since the Obama administration formally committed the United States to saying Gaddafi needs to go, that that's been our policy. We just haven't had the tools to do so. Now, this UN this UN no-fly resolution basically gets you, a means to regime change by another name. You can presume the British and the French and the Italians are on board with that. Where's the rest of the NATO coalition? Where's the Arab League? Where's the Organization of the Islamic Conference? There's just so much confusion and slippage in what an end goal here actually is, that as soon as you start to get military action taken, you're on a very slippery slope, and you don't know who's going to be with you the further down this rat hole you go, especially if Gaddafi, as he said again and again and again, is not going to leave power.
Well, you know, there were reports as late as Wednesday that were suggesting that the French and the British wanted to do this and that the U.S. was sort of foot dragging. What is your sense as to the accuracy of those reports, and what does that tell us, if that's true?
Completely accurate. The Obama administration is now pinballed in at least, you know, three different times that I can understand, between whether it was going to get on board with a really robust multilateral plan and whether it wasn't. You start out with Obama talking about regime change, with Hillary Clinton talking about a no-fly zone as basically the policy of the United States. And then you had the very interesting injection into that debate of Defense Secretary Gates and the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Admiral Mullen, saying that that's a really serious measure to take. There are going to be unforeseen consequences to doing that, and that with all of the other military commitments the United States has to take into account, the duration and the uncertainty of such a mission needs to get factored in as well. And after that, you started to see way more skepticism from inside the White House, from Chief of Staff Bill Daley saying that you know, people think that a no-fly zone is like a video game, and just on and on, seeming like they weren't going to get on board. Then the French and the European, then the French and the British and other NATO allies started, you know, feeling freaked out, like the United States was no longer on board with them. The U.S. was not in the lead at the United Nations of getting the Security Council resolution through, but now we're, in fact, on board, and it seems like everyone is committed really, really forcefully. I was expecting today to spend my afternoon at the Pentagon with Gates and Mullen doing what I figured would be an inevitable press conference, given that we're just now on board with another military endeavor, and I'm told that that's just not going to happen, which says to me that the military is not really as certain about what, in fact, its contribution to this mission is going to be, and a lot of this is being written on the fly. You can definitely see the United States playing, you know, not a leading role in this, but it's sort of yoked to events as they're happening.
This is sort of a naive question, but why was it not possible for us to say, okay, look, we will sign off on this, but you guys, speaking of Europe, of the French and the British, this is your thing.
That may be what's happening. I think that we're starting to see reports from the French and the British talking about using Mirage jets, Tornadoes from the British to be at least a first wave of that. There's certainly NATO surveillance planes in the air, AWACS, that aren't U.S. assets. The chief of staff of the Air Force, General Norrie Schwartz, made a point of saying that he thinks U.S. F-22 Raptors are going to get involved, as well as F-16s and other planes to jam communications and take out the radars and air defenses that Libya has. But it may be, at least at the start, a French and British-led NATO operation. The question that I have kind of outstanding is, you know, if we weren't going to lead this operation, how deeply, you know, does it make sense that we would be yoked to it? If we're now in a position where the United States isn't going to be the leading military force in enforcing a no-fly zone, and that might be, you know, the right call, given, you know, how overstretched, you know, we already are. We're fighting two major wars, and we're helping a really enormous disaster relief effort in Japan. Then perhaps that makes some sense. But just, you know, how much commitment does the United States demonstrate, especially now that you have essentially a unanimous Security Council resolution and NATO really looking to intervene more than the U.S. is?
Right. I mean, the bottom line is that we, you know, the real question is, how much do we brand this something that we are – how much do we brand this an American, American participation? Because as this drags on, eventually there's going to have to be ground troops, right? I mean, how do you not have ground troops unless you sort of start from the beginning and just say, like, all we're going to do is prevent a wholesale slaughter by the Air Force, by Libya's Air Force? I mean, I don't even understand how you would, like, set those parameters once you go into this.
I don't either. And you're starting to see some calls for an Arab League force come in. The Security Council resolution is a strange document because it rules out any foreign forces coming in. You can foresee a circumstance where changes get made to further the arms embargo that's on Libya to perhaps arm the rebels. But, you know, I see it kind of like you do. What's that line that Slim Charles gave to Avon on The Wire? You know, this is war, and once you're in it, you're in it. And what's going to happen, you know, very foreseeably, is that, you know, if Gaddafi doesn't give up, you know, most of the assets that he uses against the rebels are not helicopter and plane assets. They're his troops on the ground, his armor and his artillery. And, you know, are we going to bomb that from the air? At what point, you know, if he hangs on, does the United States and NATO feel compelled that it's got to get some kind of ground support into the rebels? The real reason why the Obama administration at the end buckled and went along with this resolution after, you know, pretty much, you know, indicating that it wasn't so interested in a no-fly zone is because it looked like the rebels at Benghazi were going to lose, that they were going to be massacred. And the U.S. wasn't prepared to support that and wasn't prepared to envision that. What if that circumstance happens again, even with planes in the air?
Right. I mean, that's the bottom line, is that at this point, the only thing that could prevent that would essentially be to get rid of Gaddafi.
Yeah. I mean, and unless Gaddafi is going to, you know, suddenly announce that the ceasefire heralds some kind of, you know, circumstance where he goes into exile, you know, I don't see that. And, you know, Gaddafi, you know, is said again and again, he is going to stay in charge of Libya. Admittedly, you know, that's what Hosni Mubarak said before he quit, but who knows? I mean,
right.
The statements that he makes are just so erratic and you know, nonsensical that, you know, and chilling at the same time, because they, you know, portend a really serious, you know, casualty situation. The next one he makes is probably going to be his most significant yet.
All right, and I know you got to run, so I just want to one more question, and maybe again, this is naive, but in terms of the way the administration would sell it, what is the difference in this type of scenario between our support for what's going on in Yemen as protesters are being killed, or Bahrain, where you've got Saudis coming in, you got protesters being killed? Where, you know, we have obviously a close relationship. I mean, how can we really justify we're going into Libya on humanitarian grounds, supposedly, but it's a different humanitarian situation than in, let's say, Yemen or Bahrain?
Enormous, enormous hypocrisy. I don't see how they do that, particularly now that we're seeing really just overwhelming brutality from U.S. allies in both of those countries. You know, apparently the president's going to make a statement this afternoon. I'd be very interested to see what he says to distinguish both those countries. This is also a circumstance where, you know, we talk to, you know, the White House talks to Yemen so frequently, and both the defense secretary and the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff recently completed visits to Bahrain in which they, you know, assured reporters that, you know, these guys are so committed to reform and they're so committed to nonviolence. I you know, There's just a difference of degree and not of kind, as best I can see. You know, are we going to, you know, put up some kind of military sanction against either of them? I mean, we're certainly not.
Right. All right. Spencer Ackerman, thanks so much for joining us. You can check Spencer out, of course, at the Danger Room, Wired.com. He's a senior reporter over there. Thanks so much for joining us, Spencer.
Thanks so much, Sam.
Okay. No music. I'm going to continue. We're going to do a couple more minutes here. And then look at that. Even on Casual Friday, bonus time. So that's the situation. I mean, I think at this stage of the game, we're just looking at our new war. So that's good. We get our own branded war. I mean, let's be honest, folks. It had been almost 9 years since we started one. I guess 8 years, almost to the day, actually. So, you know, we were getting tired of the old wars. There's a chance we may wrap those up in the next 10 years. And so we need a new one. Unbelievable. And, all right, let me lighten it up a little bit. This is pretty fun. And, I should say this, though. Let's play this clip of Al Jazeera English reports on the reaction of Libyan rebels in Benghazi when the UN announcement was made. Check this out.
The news that the UN had passed the no-fly zone resolution was met with this in Benghazi. It's a dramatic turn in fortunes for the pro-democracy forces here. With little indication that the West was willing to act just 24 hours ago, some were predicting that this stronghold would fall sooner rather than later. Many felt that the Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi would make good on his threat to crush the rebellion once and for all.
So you got thousands of people in Benghazi literally just jumping for joy. Now, you know,
It is, I mean, it's completely obvious that Muammar Gaddafi is a horrible dictator, a ruthless. He is actually crazy. I think Muammar Gaddafi is pretty crazy. And I just don't know, actually, if this really fit into that doctrine, at least my doctrine, of stopping ongoing genocide, because I just don't think that was happening. And, you know, what this is again, was sort of preemptive, and it's regime change, and I just don't think we should be in that business. I just don't think we should be in that business. But we are. So now let's lighten the mood just a little bit. This is pretty funny. And then we can go into talking about how the unbelievable lengths that the Obama administration is contemplating going to stopping Dorsey from streaming MSNBC on his computer. They are coming for you.
I've got some words for them when they come to get me.
All right. Well, no one's going to hear it. But
that's right, because I don't have a phone.
There you go. All right. Well, so here is Anthony Weiner. Now, I was on RT TV the other day talking about this. I didn't even mention it on our show because it's so ridiculous. So ridiculous. I don't even know what to say about this. The Republicans held an emergency session to defund NPR. An emergency session. Think about what's going on in the world right now. We're starting a new war. We've got this horrible, horrible disaster in Japan. We have supposedly this debt crisis that they keep talking about. And they are talking about permanently defunding NPR. I mean, it makes the amount of money being saved on this is so infinitesimally small, almost to be immeasurable in the context of our debt. And so the Republicans push this through, and Anthony Weiner gives the only possible response for this.
2 minutes.
2 minutes. Crisis averted, ladies and gentlemen. What a relief. What a relief. I'm glad we got the economy back going. I'm glad we've secured our nuclear power plants. I'm so glad the Americans are back to work. We finally found out our problem. We discovered a target that we can all agree upon. It's these guys. This is a problem. It's Click and Clack, the Tappet brothers. We're finally getting rid of them. Thank God we solved this problem for the country. Now let's look at the record here. For one, they talk in that Boston accent. Car talk? It's a car. It's a car, ladies and gentlemen. I need to call Congressman Capuano whenever they're on the air. Secondly, they talk about master cylinders and slave cylinders. It's kinky. And so I am glad my Republican friends are finally getting to the bottom of this. And then with all the giggling and snorting that they do every weekend on their show, it's got to be some kind of a code. They're clearly talking to the Russians or the Chinese or something with all that giggling and snorting. It is fine. I'm so relieved that we had this emergency session, that we waive the rules of the House that require 72 hours, so we finally get these guys off my radio. Click and Clack, the Tappet brothers on Car Talk. I know it. Because these guys, clearly they're political. Well, I don't know if they're political. They make no sense about most of what they say. But you know what? I'm glad we're finally not going to have to listen to them. I'm glad the Republican Party finally said enough of Click and Clack, the Tappet brothers. That clearly was what the American people said in campaign 2010. It's in their contract with America or something, right? Get rid of Click and Clack. It's about time, I have to tell you something, because the last thing we want is informative solutions to how we fix our cars and the Car Talk puzzler. And think about all the people we're finally going to put out of work. You know, their customer care rep. Hey, would you buzz off? I'll tell you how to spell this later, I say to the stenographer. And the director of ethics, you lie in sack. All of these guys that finally are going to be taken off the public payroll, the Republican Party, no one can say they're not in touch. They get it. They understand where the American people are. The American people are not concerned about jobs or the economy or what's going on around the world. They're staring at their radio saying, get rid of Click and Clack. Finally, my Republican friends are doing it. Kudos to you.
Just fantastic. And I notice he has appropriated my kudos. I got news for you. Nobody said that back in 2004. And I brought that back, the kudos. And kudos to the Obama administration. This was Declan McCullough in CNET. White House today, this was just the other day. White House today proposed sweeping revisions to U.S. copyright law, including making, quote, illegal streaming of audio or video a federal felony.
What?
And, are you ready for this? Allowing FBI agents to wiretap suspected infringers.
High on the hill was a lonely goat, her lay, hoodle, lay, hoodle, lay.
Think about it. Puppet shows. I don't know. Whenever I hear this song, I just think of all the kids. Maria von Trapp, not quite the von Trapp at the time. Because at that time she was still like a nun on leave. Just dancing on the top of that beautiful hilltop. With the Swiss Alps. Surrounding them, right? Was it Swiss Alps? No, the Viennese Alps. Some Alps. Some hills. The hills. There were hills. And they're having fun. The kids are laughing. It's all very hopeful. And, of course, they're being spied on. They're being spied on. Of course they are. Of course. Because Rolf, we know, goes home and turns on Justin TV and then watches illicit versions of CNN. Right?
That's where their audience has gone.
The report was prepared by Victoria Espinel, the first intellectual property enforcement coordinator who received Senate confirmation in 2009. This was a position established by George W. Bush, and the Obama administration, well, hopefully they won't even take this seriously, but this is just insane. Under federal law, wiretaps may only be conducted in investigations of serious crimes, right? I mean, because this is an infringement, and the opportunity to infringe upon Americans' rights of privacy is so great that we have established that the state only has an interest if it's going to save lives. And that list was expanded by the 2001 Patriot Act to include offenses such as material support of terrorism, and use of weapons of mass destruction. And now the administration is proposing to add copyright and trademark infringement. Are you effing kidding me? Where are the small government conservatives? They should be screaming to high heaven about this. And I say that rhetorically. Of course they don't give a crap. Are you kidding? Do you know why we have, well, I know you know why, because we've talked about this on the show. But the reason why the idea of patents and copyrights were ensconced in our Constitution was specifically to encourage development of products and inventions. This does not in any way, this is not in any way consistent with that. What are you saying, that MSNBC or CNN may not get, what? I mean, what? Their advertising is being seen by the same amount of people, right? I mean.
Correct.
Yeah.
What, where is the harm here? I don't even see the harm. I don't even think they can establish the harm. It's just crazy. But even if you could establish the harm here, why are we wasting our taxpayer dollars on this? Why are we wasting our taxpayer dollars on this? We don't pay tax dollar money to put policemen inside of Walmart to make sure people aren't stealing their products. That's their job. That's their job. I mean, should our police force just be make sure no shoplifting? That's their job. That's part of their, that's one of their, one of the business expenses they have. I mean, should the U.S. government be making sure that, should they be contacting me on a regular basis to make sure that no one's stealing my podcast? How do I know? How do I know? I want, where is it? Where's my service from the U.S. government? I pay my taxes. I probably pay more taxes than most of these corporations that are actually getting this benefit from the government. Unbelievable. Just unbelievable. You have, under the 1998 Digital Millennium Copyright Act, it is generally illegal to distribute hardware or software such as DVD encoding software, Handbrake, available from a server in France. Handbrake. The name of that is Handbrake. Handbrake. Brake. That can circumvent copy protection. The administration is proposing that if Homeland Security seizes circumvention devices, it be permitted to inform right holders, provide samples of such devices, and assist them in bringing civil actions. Excuse me? The term fair use does not appear in anywhere in the report. This is just a joke. It's just a joke. It is just a joke. But it's not a joke. It's a real proposal from this office. Here's what I would like to see. Instead of the Republicans wanting to essentially dismantle the Department of Education, how about you dismantle this, whatever this frickin' position is? Property enforcement, intellectual property enforcement coordinator, whatever the F that means. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Stick with us on the flip side. You can IM me at Majority FM. I will address, I know I have already seen people are commenting on yesterday's interview. I've got emails saying that she was not good. I got one email saying I completely agreed with her. I don't know what you could have agreed with. I mean, it was like I've had we'll talk about this on the flip side. Have a great weekend, ladies and gentlemen. Next week, we'll be talking to Kevin Baker, the ace New York historian, author on the famous shirtwaist, Triangle Shirtwaist Factory Fire, which seminal moment in this country for labor safety. We will probably be talking to other people and give an update on this Libya situation. And I think Andy Kindler may join us next week, the comedian, who's certainly tweeting up a storm comedy. Crazy. Don't forget, become a member, buy some Just Coffee, help us with the Amazon stuff, donate your account on Twitter. Very, very helpful. And see you Monday.